All right. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's try that again. Good morning, church.
Good morning.
How's everybody doing?
Good.
We're doing good. Awesome. Happy Mother's Day. Any moms in the house? Very cool. All right, so let's just get honest. How many of you got your Mother's Day card? Gentlemen, I'm talking to the guys. How many of you bought your Happy Mother's Day card before yesterday? Anybody? How many of you waited till yesterday, right? I did. It was absolutely insane at the Mother's Day card aisle. And it was almost like I was jockeying for a position just to get in there so I could figure out which card I wanted to get. So anyway, I know shopping for cards is great. I know shopping, especially for Mother's Day cards, are awesome. But you know, I got to be honest, all Mother's Day cards are absolutely the same, right? I mean, no? Well, some are funny, some are sappy, but for the most part, they say what? Happy Mother's Day, right? You're the most amazing mom in the world, right? But I've been shopping for Mother's Day cards forever and ever, and I'm still waiting to find that one card that says, oh, you did the best you could. I love you anyway. Happy Mother's Day. But then, I don't know if I gave a card like that, I would probably get a card later on from a birthday that said, hey, you were a disappointment to happy birthday. So anyway, you know, that's one of those things. We're going to Mother's Day, and it's just a great day because we get to celebrate, we get to honor, we get to hold high our ladies, our moms. And so last week, we kicked off a series called The Better Half, right? And so it's all about leading into the day. And talking about the value of women and the value of ladies. And so I could just say this personally, right? That if you put me and Heidi next, Heidi's right here in the front row. She's my lady, my bride. If you put us next to each other, every one of us are going to unanimously agree that she is definitely the better half, right? Better to look at. She's, you know, all of the above, right? So that's the series we kicked off. And Rod did a great job kicking the series off and talking about the value of women. And so today we're going to make another effort to not only talk about women, but talk about motherhood and why that's so important and what we're doing as a church to continue to move this forward. But the reality is mothers and women, it culturally haven't really been elevated to equal status, right? We've seen that through the history books. We see that in any kind of medieval movie that we watch, right? It's all male dominance, women subversion, and like until they get behind a curtain or a closed door, then we see who's really in charge, right? And so, but that's kind of the culture. And even in America, in our American culture, and really if you just look into very recent past, you see that men like to dominate and women don't really have a place. But now it's become a real political hot button, right? That women need to be equal. And I would agree, when you read the scriptures and you read the Bible, in the very, very beginning, it says that man and woman were created in the image of God, that they were created equal. And so we want to honor that and celebrate that and highlight that and illuminate that. But I also look into the history of the church and realize that the women hadn't got a fair deal in the history of the church as well. And it's just now as we're continuing to move forward that we're elevating women and saying, hey, yes, we appreciate you. We love you. We honor you. And yes, you can lead and be a part of what God is trying to do. See, did you guys know that Jesus, as he was introducing his ministry and as he was coming into going public with who he was, because he kept that a secret for a while and he didn't want his disciples to really even talk about the fact that he was the Son of God. And as he began to go public, that a woman was the first person that he revealed that to. It's one of my favorite stories. It's one of my favorite chapters in all the Bible. It's found in John chapter 4. You can take time to read it. But basically, Jesus has a conversation with a Samaritan woman at the well. And he basically tells her, listen, if you are thirsting, I can give you water that you'll never thirst again because I am the one that the prophets have talked about and I am here. So he introduced his messiahship first to a lady, to a female, to a woman. But then, as Rod talked about last week, Jesus also invited women into the inner circle. A lot of times this doesn't get talked about, but really, Mary and Martha, the women that Rod really highlighted last week, those two ladies were almost kind of like the glue that held that thing together. I would imagine if we had all the disciples sitting up here and we were doing just a little quick interview about, hey man, how intense were those 3 years and what was it like? You know, what was going on? What was going through your head when you saw Jesus bring somebody back from the dead? Like, we just did a quick survey, interview. And then I would say, hey, do you think y'all could have gotten it done without Mary and Martha? And I think they would unanimously said, no way. Man, those ladies worked hard. They kept the ministry moving forward. And I also know that by reading the scriptures, that Jesus revealed himself after the resurrection first to a woman. First to a woman. So Jesus was killed, right? He came back to life, and there was Mary Magdalene in the garden, and Jesus said, Mary, it's me. First, she didn't recognize him. She thought he was the gardener, right? And he revealed himself to her. And so there's something to that, I think. If you're reading the Bible from cover to cover, and you're looking at man and woman and created inequality, and you're looking at women's roles and how God has used women throughout history and through the church, I think there's something to Jesus taking those steps first with women. And so I think it's something that we need to understand and realize and work that into our understanding of who God is and what God is trying to do within the church and within our family and within our culture. I mean, heck, even Paul acknowledges women in the book of Romans. And sometimes Paul gets a bad rap for not being very woman friendly, but he even gives credit to some women. There's in the book of Romans in the 16th chapter, Paul kind of is wrapping up this letter to the Roman church. And he's basically saying, hey, I want to give a shout out to all these people and thank you for all these things. And he starts basically running a list of people thanking. And he thanks a couple of guys for things. He thanks a couple of girls for things. But when he's mentioning the girls, something great happens, all right? So in verse 6, look at what Romans 16, verse 6 says. It says, greet Mary. So he's addressing a woman who worked very hard for you. You see, this is the first time this phrase, work very hard, comes up with Paul in this list. He's giving shout out to guys. Hey, thanks for being with me in prison. Hey, thanks for doing this. Thanks for doing that. But when he comes to a woman, he says, greet Mary, who worked very hard for you. Not just worked hard, worked very hard. Then if you skip down to verse 12, it says, greet Tryphena and Tryphosa, those women who work what? Hard in the Lord. And so there seems to be this idea, there seems to be this picture that's being painted in the scriptures that not only are women equal, but they get stuff done, right? I mean, you ladies know how you roll, right? You get stuff done. You make it happen. And so it's just really cool to see that as we look through the scriptures. So it seems to me that not only are women capable to do anything, that they are vital to what God is doing in this world. Vital. Mission critical for you ladies to be a part of what God is trying to do. But we may be asking ourselves, well, what does this have to do with Mother's Day, right? I mean, what does it have to do? Well, I believe it has everything to do with it, because this is what makes you the mom that you are. This is what makes you the mother of your children. This is what makes you the mother of your home. This is what makes you to be a mom that doesn't quit. A mom that doesn't quit. A mom that presses in. A mom that says, I don't have any idea how all this stuff is going to get done, but I'm going to keep pressing in, and I'm going to keep working hard, and I'm going to make my task list, and I'm going to check it off. I'm going to do my thing, and I'm going to keep working hard, because moms don't quit. This morning, I want to take just a few minutes to look at a passage that shows us a mom that's doing what moms do best, right? Before we look at the story, though, I want us to understand the context of the story before we look at the details. I want to give you a little bit of background. In the book of Matthew, the book of Matthew is the first book in the New Testament, and the book of Mark is the one that follows Matthew, and those are considered the Gospels. In the first two Gospels, this story shows up right after Jesus is talking to the Jewish community about purity, Okay. So he's talking about purity and had this little conversation, and a lot in the Jewish community, and especially when it's tied to the law, there's this idea that whatever you did with your hands, if you hadn't washed your hands really good and then you touched food and then you put it in your mouth, that automatically made you an unclean person, right? If you didn't wash real well, if you weren't clean, then if you touched something and put it in your mouth, then automatically by default you were unclean, and you had a list of things you had to do to become unclean. And Jesus is like, hey, listen, I know that's how y'all have lived for all these years, and I know how that's how you've taken these very simple 10 commandments that I gave you, and you've turned them into 682 things to do, but I'm telling you, that's not what makes you unclean. We know what makes you unclean by the things that come out of your mouth because of what's going on in your heart. It's more internal instead of external. And so that's the conversation that's happened right before Jesus has this encounter with this mom, with this lady. And so if you have your Bible, I want to ask you to turn to the book of Matthew. We're going to look at Matthew chapter 15. And I want us to look at this story because I think it's a great story for Mother's Day, because this mom is being a mom. She's being who God has created her to be. And I just want to highlight a few things out of this passage. So look at Matthew chapter 15. We're going to look at verses 21 through 28. And this is what it says. It says, leaving that place, so leaving that conversation with these Jewish people, these Jewish leaders, leaving that place, Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon. A Canaanite woman from that vicinity came to him crying out, Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter is suffering terribly from demon possession. Now, let's just be honest. A lot of us have a hard time even wrapping our head around what that may look like, right? Demon possession. And so for a lot of us, it'd be a pretty scary thing to watch our children go through something like that. I mean, I can remember watching what's the movie where the girl's head spins around? The Exorcist, and then they came up with a new one recently, like some crazier version of that. Like, that's the idea of demon possession, right? That's insane. And to watch a child go through something like that would be even more crazy. But that's kind of what's going on here, is this lady has a daughter. She's demon possessed. She's coming to Jesus. Verse 23 says this, but Jesus did not answer a word. Now, as we get into this, we're going to see some very difficult things that Jesus says. And a lot of times there's this picture of painted of Jesus, right? This blonde-haired, blue-eyed, soft, fluffy, doesn't say anything offensive kind of Jesus. But Jesus says some very hard, very difficult, very, offensive things. And so you have this mom who's a Canaanite woman. Now understand, Jesus was talking to the Jewish community. He's withdrawing to have some one-on-one time with his father and some quiet time. This Canaanite woman who was not Jewish, she would be considered a non-Jew or a Gentile. She would be considered unclean, approaches him and says, hey, I need you to help my daughter. And Jesus doesn't even acknowledge her. Jesus doesn't answer a word. Now, look at what his disciples did. So his disciples came to him and urged him. And you think, oh, these guys are going to be compassionate. They're going to urge Jesus to help, all right? But actually, that's not what they do. They says, the disciples came to him and urged him, send her away, for she keeps crying out afterwards. In other words, Jesus, will you make her just shut up? I mean, she's annoying us. I've seen so many words, what they're saying. We're done. We can't hear her anymore. She's exhausting us. And then Jesus answered in verse 24, says, I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel. Now, what does that mean? The lost sheep of Israel. Well, the Jewish community, now understand, he's had a conversation with the Jewish community, the Jewish leaders. All right, he's going one-on-one with them, kind of reteaching what God's heart is and how God wants us to function not only with him, but with other people. He's withdrawing, in other words, he's trying to leave. This Canaanite woman who is a non-Jew approaches him, and everybody's watching to see what happens. Everybody's got their eyes on Jesus. And so Jesus says, hey, I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel, meaning that, hey, I'm here for the Jews, because the Jewish community thought, he's only here for us, the Messiah, the King of Kings, God's Son. He's going to come save us, and we're going to rise to power, and we're going to rule and reign over every other race, every other people group, every other nation. We're going to be the top dogs in the world again. And so Jesus very cleverly starts to unpack, rewind, and undo the thinking of that day. Verse 25 says, the woman came and knelt before him. Lord, please help me, she said. He replied, now listen to this. This is another harsh, radical, hard, offensive statement. He replied, it is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs. Now, what does that mean, right? Well, that basically means I don't want to use a miracle to save your daughter because she's not a Jew. That's what it means. Why would I waste this power on you when everybody who's looking at you thinks that you are a lower class citizen? Interesting. In verse 27, she says, well, yes, Lord. She's validating what he's saying. She said, but this is brilliant. She said, but even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. So you have a non-Jewish Canaanite woman who's viewed as a second-class citizen, not as good as those who are watching and listening and watching what Jesus is doing. She says, hey, listen, I am not too proud to recognize that you are God's son, the master. And will you please help my daughter? And then Jesus does what Jesus does best, right? Verse 28, he answered, woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted. And her daughter was healed that very hour. It's a great, great Mother's Day story, I think. Pretty intense. It's loaded with all kinds of crazy language and things that could be quite offensive. But I think at the end of the day, Jesus was trying to paint a picture, number one, that he was here for everybody. But number two, that he will bring healing, restoration when you have faith. And so there's this mom who's just being a mom. She's doing what moms do best. She doesn't quit because moms don't quit, right? And so on this Mother's Day, I want to look at there a couple of little things that I want to pull out of this passage for us to understand. The first thing is this, that moms that don't quit are tenacious. Isn't that a great word? Tenacious. And I looked up the definition of tenacious because we use it in all different ways. So I wanted to have the exact definition. It basically says this. It says tenacious means it's an adjective. It's to be holding fast, characterized by keeping a firm hold, right? Okay, so I know what I got to do, and I'm going to take a hold of it, and I'm not going to stop till it's get done. I'm going to be tenacious. It's used in an example in the definition, a tenacious grip on my arm. So somebody can have a tenacious grip, a firm hold. Or another way it could be a tenacious of old habits. Meaning I can't shake these things. I'm tenacious toward these old habits. But tenacious could also mean stubborn or obstinate, right? Stubborn or obstinate, right? It's a great word, tenacious. And moms that don't quit are tenacious. Now, tenacious is one of those cool words. And I mean, many of us men, can I be honest? Many of us men have made the mistake of calling our ladies, what, stubborn, right? Maybe hard-headed, right? But man, how much better does it say with, baby, you are being tenacious, right? It makes it just sound all better. Right? I got me a tenacious woman, right? It sounds kind of makes it a good thing, right? But moms that don't quit are tenacious. I mean, doesn't this definition fit this mom in this story? She's tenacious. She's tenacious in her pursuit to get help for her daughter, right? She's like, my daughter's sick. That's the guy that's been healing people and feeding people and doing these crazy, amazing things. I'm going to him. I'm going to have a tenacious hold on my task. Her daughter's demon-possessed, and we can all agree that that's not a good thing. And so this mom had most likely exhausted every other avenue to bring healing for her daughter, to no avail. And then she hears that this Jesus guy is coming to town. That'd be like us hanging out, right? Let's say we're hanging out at Mama's Five Sons. We're eating some spaghetti or we're eating some Alfredo or throwing down on, you know, a slice of pizza pie. And we're just hanging out. We're doing our thing. And we know our daughter's sick. And then all of a sudden somebody walks in that restaurant and says, hey, that guy Jesus, he's coming to town. He's like, he's passing through downtown Jefferson right now. And we would stop. We'd push back from the table. We'd get up and we'd go meet him there if we were in that situation. This mom is doing what she was created to do, to be tenacious. She locks in on Jesus and begins to do what every mom would do to get help for her daughter. She's focused. Because moms that don't quit are tenacious. There's a second thing I want us to see. That moms that don't quit are persistent. They're persistent. That's another good word, right? To be persistent. We think, hey, that's a pretty good description of a mom or a person. It's a good quality. The word persistent is another adjective, and it's defined as persisting, right? The act of being persistent is persisting, especially in spite of opposition, obstacles, disappointment. Like, those three things are what was going on with her and Jesus, right? I mean, she was having opposition. Jesus wasn't even listening to her. The disciples are saying, shoo, go away. You can't speak to Jesus. Opposition. She had obstacles because Jesus is basically saying, hey, listen, you're considered this type of person in this culture. And she was also being discouraged because it seems that he wasn't going to help her. But another way to define persistent, secondly, is that it's lasting or enduring tenaciously. Isn't that interesting? Like, I looked those words up and I was like, huh, how cool is that? That those two words kind of go together. And moms that don't quit are not only tenacious, they are persistent. And this passage, this word persistency describes this woman, doesn't it? I mean, she's pretty doggone persistent when it comes to getting what she wants. How many of you ladies, how many of you moms would say you're pretty doggone persistent about getting what you want, right? You may not get it immediately, but you're going to get what you want. Yeah, that's right. There we go. So that's just kind of how God has created you. You see, she's being persistent. First, she approaches Jesus to begin with. She's a Canaanite woman. She's not Jewish. She's culturally awkward. And then she asks him for mercy. He ignores her. The disciples are like, Jesus, she's wearing us out. He then refers to her as a dog. She agrees and then gives a compelling reason why he should help her anyway. And he does. I often wonder if she hadn't been persistent, would her daughter have not been healed? Because she was being tenacious, right? I mean, she did a tenacious act. She locked in on the Savior and she went after him and she had a mission to accomplish. And man, he could have ignored her and she could have been like, ah, man. And she could have wandered off. But not only was she tenacious, she was persistent. And in her persistency, she gave him a compelling reason to heal her daughter. And her daughter was healed. You see, this reminds me of when I was a kid. I was in middle school, I think probably 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. This season of my life was, we lived in Savannah, Georgia, then we moved to Somerville, South Carolina, then we moved back to Savannah, Georgia. So it was almost like a blur of time. I don't know if you guys have ever experienced that, but you kind of have some roots, but you kind of don't. And you're a middle schooler anyway, so you're not right in the head automatically, right? So you just, everything's changing, you're not comfortable. I mean, it's all messed up. Everything's messed up, right? Well, I began getting sick, and it was one of those weird things where I would get a really, really high fever. And then after this high fever would come, I would get these rashes all over my body. And they would show up like on this middle finger, right? So I would get to show people my rash, right? Hey, yeah, it's right here. Anyway, sorry if that was inappropriate, but It's what middle schoolers do, right? Anyway, I'd get rashes in the palms of my hands, on my elbow joints, on my knee joints. I even got a rash on my rear end. I mean, it was weird, awkward. It itched. It was fire hot. And then the fever would go away. The rash would go away. And a couple of days later, everywhere that had a rash, the skin would peel off. So it was wild. It was weird. And this is not something that just happened once. This happened about every 6 to 8 weeks. And as it happened, when they finally started doing tests, because, like, you know, mom and dad were like, something's not right. Why does this keep happening? Well, you know the drill, right? You go to the doctor. Then they say, well, you need to go to another doctor. Well, you need to go to a specialist. And that specialist says, well, we don't know what's wrong. We need to go see this specialist. And before you know it, right, I'm all over the southeastern United States going to different places. And I ended up at Duke University being studied for some crazy disease that they'd never heard of or seen. They tested me for sickle cell, for Kawasaki's disease. They tested me for every disease under the sun. I got tested. They never really could figure out all the details of why what was going on, but somehow along the way, my mom was like, we're not quitting till we get this figured out. And lo and behold, some doctor in my hometown of Savannah, Georgia, figured out that all I needed was a diphtheria shot. And I got the shot. It hurt like a mm-hmm. And I was well. You see, my mom was tenacious. My mom was persistent. My mom was just being who God created her to be, and she had a sick child, and she wasn't going to give up. You see, it's what moms do. Moms don't quit. Moms that don't quit are tenacious and they're persistent, especially when raising their kids. And the third thing I want us to see is that mothers that don't quit are teachers. Mothers that don't quit are teachers. I want to show you guys something really cool that I discovered a number of years ago in the book of Proverbs, chapter 1. Book of Proverbs, chapter 1. So Proverbs is like the book of wisdom, right? If you want to have wisdom in this life, read Proverbs, put it in your heart, put it in your head, and you'll begin to make wise decisions. Well, the book of Proverbs, chapter 1, it starts off with verse 8 and verse 9. Listen what Solomon says here. It says, listen, my son, to your father's instruction. Wouldn't you say that's a good thing? Sons, listen to your father's instruction, right? But look at what it says next. And do not forsake your mother's what? Teaching. So, son, listen to your dad's instruction, but don't forsake, walk away, leave your mother's teaching. Verse 9 says, there will be a garland to grace your head and a chain to adorn your neck. The teaching of a mom. You see, God created moms not only to be tenacious and to be persistent, but to be great teachers. I love these verses because it paints a very accurate picture of the differences between men and women and moms and dads, doesn't it? I mean, this is kind of the way it shakes out at my house. This is me talking, right? A son, daughter, fill in the blank. We got six of them, so, you know, just pick one, right? Son or daughter, pick up your stuff and take it to your room. The kid will say, well, why? I'm going to say, because I said so, right? Amen. I'm instructing, being a good dad. Well, Heidi comes along and says, hey, do you know why your dad is asking you to do that? No, because we need to take care of the things God has given us. You see the difference? Huh? All right. I'm instructing, doing what God created me to do. She's teaching. I mean, you know, it could happen like this. We take our crew out front doors. We're heading to the car, right, because church is over. And then we got a whole gaggle of kids. And I'm like, kids, don't run out into the parking lot. It's not safe. The mom's typically going to say, kids, don't run into the parking lot. Well, why? Because a big truck is going to run you over and break up. I may have taken that a little too far, but you see what I'm saying? As moms have this unique ability, the amazing gift to give the why behind the what, right? To connect the dots, to give the why behind the what. And this passage is great because it illuminates what moms do all day long with their kids. They teach them. They give them the why behind the what. They connect the dots of here is what you should be doing, and this is why you should be doing it. Moms stand in the gap, and they teach our children why we should be doing what we should be doing. Listen, your role as a mom impacts your family, no doubt. But it doesn't stop there. It does more than impact your family, because a lot of us, right, we're a family, a church family. And so if your role as mom impacts your immediate family, then your role as mom is going to impact your church family, right? And so we come together in large group setting like this, which is awesome and fun. Our band gets to rock it out. We get to raise our hands. We get to sing. We get to watch videos. We get to hear what God's saying through his word. We get to worship through giving. We get to do all those great things corporately as believers. But then we step out of the church setting and we live in a world where people are looking at us. And so your role as mom impacts your immediate family. It helps impact the local church. But as we talk about all the time here at Crossroads, it impacts our community, our culture, and our world. So we implore you, mothers, we encourage you to press into how God has created you, to own it, to say, I'm tenacious. Because God has created me to be tenacious. I'm persistent because God has created me to be persistent. And I'm going to teach my children the best way I know how. I'm going to help connect the dots for them when they ask those questions, why? That's how God created us. He created you. He didn't create me that way. I'm a guy. Friends, church, this Mother's Day, we hope that you understand your role and how God has uniquely created you to be a strong, God-honoring woman. Because when you step into that reality, God will use you in a way that will affect generations that you won't even see. Because you were intentional about being tenacious and persistent and teaching your children to just being the mom God has created you uniquely to be. So we honor you. We thank God for you. We say, well done. We say, don't quit. We say, don't quit. Keep it up. Let's keep moving forward. I'm going to pray. God, thank you for this day, and thank you for the chance just to be able to be in the room with these amazing people in this amazing church. God, thank you for all that you're doing in the lives of our women, in the lives of our moms. And so, God, I pray that as we continue to move through the rest of our service, as we look at what you're doing through motherhood and through our children, and God, as we sing to you, and God, as we give to you, first and foremost, if we're a man in this room and we're married or have a mom, that God, that today is not just a one and done day. That we have a clear understanding, Father, of her role and what she's doing. And God, my prayer is that we will come alongside with her and allow her to be the mom you created her to be. And God, I pray for the moms, the expecting moms and the moms to be. And God, I pray that they just press in to you and the Holy Spirit and just trust that what you're doing in their life may not seem like it's making a lot of difference right now. But God, as your scriptures say, we raise them up And even though they may go away, they will return. So God, allow our moms to continue to plant those seeds of truth into the hearts and to the minds of our kids. It's in Jesus' name that I pray.